Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I'm so happy to have you join us. Today, I'll be dishing with Amy Beeney about the benefits of eating together as a family, working on small changes, and the endless quest for knowledge in the healthcare field. Amy is a wife, mom, and avid traveler. She has been a registered dietitian for over 20 years, and you can learn more about her through the links in this episode. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Amy Beeney, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. How's your day been going so far?
You know, today, Mondays are usually my easy days where it's nice and quiet and I kind of get paperwork done or do some audio. But today my kids have exams, so it's been a hectic morning, but you know, that's life.
It is life. I've changed one of the questions that I will eventually ask you, where I have asked in the past, what is a typical day? And instead I'm just like, there is no such thing as a typical day sometimes with people. Yeah. So Amy, will you share with our listeners? I always like to give a little introduction as far as how did we come to know about each other? Like, how did you learn about me or how did I learn about you? Do you remember?
I learned about you on Facebook with a request for guests for your podcast, and you're a dietitian. I'm a dietitian and I loved your website. You had some really great things on there and I love that you're doing a podcast and opened it up to other fellow dietitians. I think that's really
great. Thank you. Thank you for answering the call, because it's not necessarily hard for me to find guests, but I've also shared with a lot of people, you don't get out unless you put in. So, you know, try to make sure you're letting people know that you have something that you're working on or you want to share. And a lot of times I'll get feedback like, I've never been a guest before. I've never been on a podcast. I don't know what to talk about. And by the time we're done, we know everything about everything. We have things in common. Like, it's so much fun to learn about my guests in this very organic way and see what unfolds in the conversation. So thank you for answering that request.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So Amy, let's start with your earliest food memories. Can you share a little bit with us about where you grew up, the family dynamic, some go-to traditional foods that you remember? Like, what comes to mind when you think of you and your childhood?
You know, I grew up with both my parents in the home, and I had two brothers, and my mother made dinner probably every single night, with the exception of probably Mother's Day. She put her foot down and said, I'm not doing it. And we weren't allowed to go out to eat either. So it was my dad cobbling something together. But yeah, we probably had dinner together every single night, which now that I'm a working mom, I'm like, wow. Because my mom's a working mom too. And so she did it every night. And, you know, very traditional meals. She would make the meat, potato, and vegetables every single night. Nothing fancy. And yeah, that's some of my earliest memories. And even growing up, my dad always had high cholesterol. And my mom would read labels, you know, and be like, this is what's making cholesterol high. With, you know, back in the 80s, people didn't really talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's very advanced in that sense. I mean, she didn't come from a background of understanding nutrition, but she made sure she was an educated consumer.
Absolutely, yes.
Do you remember any time when you were younger or whenever, whatever age it might have been, where did you go shopping? Did you make food with her? Were you in the kitchen? Did you learn recipes from her? How did that come about? How was your role in all of that?
I do remember going grocery shopping with my mom, but not too often. You know, when I was really young, we grew up in a really small mountain town that really didn't have a lot of access to a lot of different things. And then when I was about 8 years old, we moved to Buffalo, which was a much larger city, but we were in school, she was home, and she worked as a nurse, so she could work, you know, per diem or different shifts. So it wasn't something she went to the typical 9 to 5. So, but she always did it all herself. Like, she wasn't one to be like, you know, we always had to set the table, do dishes, put stuff away. But when it came to making meals, you know, she was the one in charge of that.
So she did have a medical or healthcare background, being a nurse. Yeah. So she understood. See, that's an interesting thing too, because I'm sure you and I will speak about this also, the role that the interdisciplinary team member plays when mm-hmm. we're helping people managing their own conditions. So you kind of had somebody right in your back pocket being aware of all that stuff. Did she have certain guidelines or rules and regulations that she implemented in the home based around food, like what should and shouldn't be brought in, what could not support your health, or any kind of structured routine around foods?
You know, I don't know where she would have gotten her information from, unless it was like Good Housekeeping magazine, because there wasn't really the internet. It wasn't on the news. It wasn't, you know, they didn't have a streaming feed. It was kind of, you know, probably Good Housekeeping or National Enquirer. Who knows what was around in the 80s. But I do remember when my dad was diagnosed with high cholesterol, she wouldn't let us have coconut oil. And she would like read the labels, which, you know, now as an adult, coconut oil is everywhere.
Yeah, and this really speaks to how different disciplines, even within the same healthcare profession, learn different things, right? We often say that doctors might not get more than, say, maybe one class or one semester of nutrition education, mm-hmm. and the rest of it is spent on disease and pain management or medicine. And then, of right. course, we as dietitians, which we'll talk a little bit too, we get our training in medical nutrition therapy. We understand the disease states and food modifications, but there's a behavioral component in all of that when we speak to a lot of our patients and clients, and we're mm-hmm. not qualified behavioral counselors or therapists, but there's some that fold in there. So we all kind of rely on different people to support our own scope, or to like refer people out if we are unable to do so. I think that's hysterical with the Good Housekeeping comment. I totally understand what you're talking about. Yeah. This may date both you and I. Maybe some of our listeners are not entirely sure what we're talking about, but yeah, a big deal back in the day, right? Grocery shopping at the cash register, you pick up your whatever magazine was there with the helpful habits and the food preparation recipes. And the fact that coconut oil, understandably, yes, saturated fats, but different, you know, plant-based versus animal-based type of, I guess, effects of food on the body. So that's interesting too, how she was trying to kind of disseminate that information and apply it to your family.
Yeah, and it wasn't really available. Like, it's amazing how and why people are so confused by what should you eat, when the information they say changes all the time, and it does. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember not eating avocados because she's like, they're so high in fat. You know, if I had like ordered a Cobb salad, she's like, those avocados are so high in fat. And now, you know, they're an avocado a day, you know, keeps the dietitian and the doctor away, I think, nowadays. Yes.
That's one of my, if any of my students are listening right now, I'm sure they're laughing hysterically, because one of my trick questions on our class introductions when we're going through macro and micronutrients is I ask them, what has more cholesterol, an avocado or an egg? And a lot of them will say an avocado because they've learned avocados are high in fat. But avocados are not high in cholesterol, they're high in the good fat, the good quality fat that we've come to know. So I love when, you know, semesters later, I'll get an email, Professor Dina, if it weren't for you and that stupid avocado egg question, I wouldn't have remembered this. So Amy, walk us through now, right? You're talking about obviously your childhood, but walk us through some of the later stages in life where you become more independent. What kind of role did food play? And can you also share with us when you started recognizing that you enjoyed nutrition and that was a career that you wanted to get into?
You know, I have asked myself many times what made me become a dietitian. And I always wanted to be a dietitian. Like when I was in high school, you know, first I went to do an internship at the vet, and I quickly knew that was not going to be my thing, is taking care of sick animals. And then I ended up doing an internship at a local hospital in the diet department, which of course is in the basement of the hospital. And the dietitians there were like, why do you want to become a dietitian? Like, what are you doing? You know how long the school is? You're not going to get paid that well. And I said, no, I'm going to do it. And I, like, there was no deterring me from it. So, you know, it's kind of, and even when I first became a dietitian, I was like, I don't know if this is what I want to do. Like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything that I thought was exceptional, but I worked in a nursing home, I worked in a hospital, I taught classes, all sorts of stuff. And I took time off when my kids were little. And when I came back and there's the internet and there's so much accessibility, it really is so fascinating, the whole field of nutrition. Like, I literally could read all day and be totally immersed in information on health and nutrition.
So that was, as we come to learn the term of having a passion for something, that really was in you to be able to follow this and pursue this. I have to say, on my end, I didn't even know what a dietitian was up until literally 10 years ago when I started looking at this as a second career for myself. I had never crossed paths with one, even though I suffered from a lot of gastrointestinal problems, even though my mom had a slew of chronic conditions that could have been benefited and better managed by meeting with a dietitian. And so now, of course, the role that I play is not only for my own clients and patients, but also as an advocate for her and anyone else that I happen to be related to. I'm always asking them, like, have you been referred to a dietitian? Tell your doctor to stop talking to you and send you to a dietitian. Like, go right. See somebody who specializes in this. So share with us too, then, some of your own habits. Like, did you notice anything in yourself that you were finding to be more health supportive, or things that you found were a little bit, maybe, you know, I tend to use the word like indulgent, or things that you felt you had a good relationship or not so good relationship food as you started getting to be your own independent self?
Oh, probably sugar was the big one that, you know, you don't realize you have a problem with until, you know, you kind of pay attention and you're like, oh. And it was probably maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I gave up sugar and I was like, I'm quitting sugar for 2 weeks and I'll no sugar. And I knew my husband had a box of dots in his car, and it was all I could do not to go drive and get those dots out of his car, that I realized that I had a problem with how much sugar, because it's in everything. It would be in coffee, it would be, you know, a little candy bar after lunch, you know, it would find its way in. And that was probably the food that, now that I did that, you know, I can certainly have some sugar, but it definitely opened my eyes to that's, you know, what difficulty people have with just eating processed sugar.
And I'm glad that you clarified that. So for the listeners as well, who might not know what we're talking about here, when Amy's saying sugar, specifically, Amy, you're mentioning refined sugars or added sugars to foods, sweet treats, candies, and things. In the larger sense, yes, the carbohydrates as a molecule will break down into sugars, or you'll have different forms of sugar like fructose and lactose. But yeah, the refined sugar discussion. So if you don't mind, let's venture off for 1 second here, because this is kind of the controversial topic that comes up a lot with, I think, the newer generation of dietitians, or at least as we're going into the understanding of the behavioral factors of people's relationships with food, of encouraging an all foods fit or a food freedom approach, of, you know, trying to have people make peace with, there's something here that you feel you've gone off the rails with, but let's see how we can get you back on track, as you just mentioned, to have a better relationship and be more mindful with that intake. But then there's also the discussion of, okay, what about people who have, you know, chronic kidney issues or diabetes? Are we allowing just everybody to have whatever the heck we want? Why are we so in love with not forcing necessarily, but opening up this freedom approach of having people have added sugar foods? What are your thoughts on that, if you don't mind me asking, or if you've given any thought to that?
I've given a lot of thought to it, and I work with people every day. And I, you know, the one thing I will tell people is, you know, write it down. Like, write down how much sugar and look at labels and say, how much do I really eat in a day? And personally, when I realized how much was filtering its way in and kind of caught myself craving things like a box of dots, like, I knew that I was eating too much sugar. And once I gave it up for 2 weeks, how much better I felt just doing that, and knowing when I cross a certain threshold, or if I feel a certain way, I can pinpoint it to something that I ate and say, was that a good choice or was that not something I want to do again because I don't feel good from doing it? So do I eat everything? Yeah, like there's nothing that I won't say that I won't eat, with the exception I don't love raw celery. But other than that, I would never say you can't have chocolate cake, you can't have fresh chocolate chip cookies, because those are the best parts of life. But to kind of realize how food makes you feel and being aware of what you're eating is super important.
I want to acknowledge also that you do have the certification. You are a certified diabetes care and education specialist. So yeah. When working with people with diabetes, that is also something that is not literally or figuratively off the plate. They just have to monitor and control and understand how their blood sugars work when they're consuming certain things and deciding mm-hmm. on portions.
Yes, yes. And I think when people are aware of what they're eating and they make the choice, like I had a patient that was, she was diabetic and she was consistently eating Haagen-Dazs ice cream every night and wasn't sleeping well. And then her blood sugar was high in the morning. And we said, hey, why don't we swap to something different that's still a treat, but not quite so heavy. And she's like, I sleep better. My blood sugars are on target. And I don't feel deprived. Like, I don't feel like I'm giving things up. And I feel so much better that you don't have to give everything up. But once you kind of realize how food affects down the line, you make the choice to feel better.
Yeah. And I think that speaks also to the accountability and ownership of the people that with whom we work. They come to us as specialists and we're there to guide. And we have obviously, you know, evidence-based recommendations and guidelines for everybody, but it really is that individualized, customized approach to people. So if you're going to be denying somebody something, while I understand, you know, of course, maybe within reason, if somebody's allergic to, has like a severe allergy or has been diagnosed with an allergy to some sort of food, we're not encouraging them to take that, obviously. But if we can find a happy medium, where, as you just said, food is not just for nourishment, it's also for enjoyment factor. Because when you remove something that brings people enjoyment, then what is the quality of life there? Where all they're doing is managing their disease. There's that state of, I can't have fun, I can't socialize, I can't enjoy things. And that really brings down the quality of life, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Are there things that you do recommend when you're working with people about, like you mentioned before, with maybe tracking or keeping a food log? I know some people think they have to go to full extremes with this stuff, but I'm like you. I like seeing just data. I like just knowing when I eat this, I notice this. So I don't necessarily ask people to weigh and measure things, but are there certain approaches that you tend to take or encourage or ask, you know, when you're meeting with people a day or two before, bring this with you regularly so we can both check out what's happening?
Yeah. So it really depends on the person. Some people love tracking things and, you know, always have their phone and always have the apps to track things. Some people are pen and paper, you know, they come in with their notes. Some people, I'll say, you know, 2 days during the work week, why don't you kind of write things down to get an idea? And then one day on the weekend to see what the difference is. And I tell people, I'm not super focused on calories, but I want you to be mindful of, hey, you know, I was starving at dinner on Saturday night. Oh, I didn't eat lunch and I, you know, had a donut for breakfast. And that's why the day went sideways, you know, and so they become aware of what their own patterns are and kind of make the choice in how they want to improve and gives them ownership to do it. So everybody's kind of different. Some people don't want to record at all. Some people will take pictures. It's really what, you know, when I work with people, I want to make their lives easier and I want to make things simpler and I want to make things more streamlined. I don't want to make it hard.
Right. Meet, as we say, right. Meeting them where they're at and understanding, recognizing whatever their day is, whatever their routine, their structure is, not asking them to put more on their figurative plate, I guess, in that sense, but also allowing us as the specialists to do our job because we need to collect information and data and also see areas of improvement and where some challenges might be happening so that we can step in and help guide them with interventions or treatments or some sort of plan to help strategize and help them meeting their goals in that sense of whatever it turns out to be at the end of the day, what they want to accomplish or what their doctors might also have instructed them to take a look at. So, Amy, you mentioned that you specialize wise, or at least the majority of your patients do have diabetes, but you, like I, have worked in a variety of different settings. Can you share with us a little bit what were some of maybe unique differences, like in the world of pediatrics and long-term? Obviously, I know age is a huge difference there, but are there different approaches that you would take? Because you're, you know, if we look at, say, pediatrics, granted, 0 through 18 is technically the ages within pediatrics, but we can also look at the younger years and know that not every child is going to be able to shop and cook on their own when they're 5. So you're also working with care providers or caregivers or parents. So what did you maybe enjoy most or like least about different populations or settings or clinical conditions over the course of time that you've been a dietitian?
You know, I worked in long-term care, and I have a special place in my heart for senior citizens. Like, I do really enjoy working with that age group because I think they're so appreciative. And when you improve the quality of their life and help simplify things for them, you know, they come in usually with multiple diet orders that they don't understand, and they don't really want to cook, and they don't really want to shop because, you know, they've been doing it their whole lives. When you can kind of simplify that, it's really great. And I think the pediatric population I do enjoy working with, and it keeps me on my toes because I have teenagers myself. So I am in the boat with all of these other parents, like just trying to do what's best for our kids. And the families are tough because it's a family dynamic that you're working with. And I think, you know, if you have even, you know, a mom and dad, or, you know, parents and one or two or three kids, you know, and then step parents or whoever's in the home, like you have a lot of different dynamics that's all working towards the same goal, but it's really difficult and that's probably a harder group to work with.
Right. I know people with whom I've worked, even when the children might be around the same age, you're still dealing with so many different personalities and unique needs and things that, you know, may or may not be like happening at the time of, say, food jags or, you know, aversions to certain things. Or maybe you're working with a child that has an allergy, and then everyone in the house has to accommodate that in some way. And so you want to also make sure you're addressing the other child who might maybe feel a little bit outcasted, because I'm not, you know, as special as that person who's getting all the attention, but I still want to enjoy food. So will you share with us both on the end of being a professional in a professional setting, but also in your own personal life, what the role of the other type of lifestyle habits play in helping support our overall healthy habits? You mentioned in our pre-discussion and some of the things that you had sent me earlier about food, yes, but also sleep, which is a huge thing with me, physical activity, movement, self-care, you know, anything along those lines, what the role there plays, how you see it for yourself, and how also you try to incorporate it in your discussions with your clients and patients.
You know, I think those what you just described is probably what I talk about, you know, all day, and they all are interrelated. And it's not, you know, a lot of times when people come in, they want to tell me what they eat, which is fine. That's what I'm here for. But I also want to know, like, how did you sleep? You know, did you sleep great last night, or did you sleep terribly? And how did that affect your food choices? And a lot of times I'll go over with people, you know, when you don't sleep well, like, it changes the types of food you crave. It changes the hormonal structure in your body. And if it's consistently doing that, you're going to see how that plays a role. And then physical activity too. You know, finding something that you enjoy doing. I tell people, you don't have to run marathons. You don't have to strength train. But even if you find something you enjoy, 10 or 15 minutes a day, find an app, find a YouTube video, go find a friend. Like, even 10 or 15 minutes can make a really big difference, and to build on that. The other thing a lot of times I'll work on, even with families especially, is, you know, where do you sit and eat? You know, do you sit at a table when you eat? Is the TV on? Are your phones out? And I'll tell people at the baseline, if you just turn off distractions, turn off TV, clear off a spot to eat, no matter what you're serving, that's one of the number one things that you can do. is to sit with whoever you live with, your kids, your partner, your spouse, whatever, is probably one of the number one things that you can do in terms of improving your health. And even at work, you know, turn off the computer when you're eating lunch or all those things. I'm guilty myself, but it's simple things like that too that can make a big difference.
I wanted to speak on a few things because they really resonate with me. I know as far as condition management of certain conditions like high cholesterol, heart issues, anything related along the lines of heart issues, and with diabetes, if you can, right, moving whatever you can, however often you can, really does play a role in helping distribute those nutrients into where they need to go, getting that body moving. I am not great with physical activity on a regular basis. I have confessed that more than once on this podcast, but I've gotten in the habit because I have my own issues with my own things. I've had some cholesterol things and some high blood pressure things. I mean, I'm human, right? We've talked about this. I think as a profession, we're dietitians, but we're also human people. So we have our own things that we're working on as well. And so I've now finally settled into a habit where I think 3 times a day, I'll make sure that I'm doing something. So I have a morning routine where I get up and I move around 6:30 in the morning is like my exercise where I'll go to the gym or whatever it is. And then around, depending on what I'm working on, around 2:30, something along that area, I'll just get up and do something, whether it's a walk around the block or jumping jacks or just get up and like do the dishes, you know, something just to get me away from the computer. And then my wind down time too has become really important to me. About you know, an hour or so before I'm heading to bed, I'll start kind of going through the practice of getting ready to go to bed. And then I start maybe doing some stretches or light yoga or something just to get some movement, blood flowing, but also keep me focused and grounded and kind of empty out any of the stressors that might have happened throughout the day. So that's something that I tend to encourage people. Treat it almost like an appointment with yourself. You know, try to make sure you get that time that you need, get the blood flowing. And when it comes to what you're saying too with the work environment, whether you're working for yourself or you're working in an office setting, you know, I know a lot of people who will say, like, I just eat lunch so I can get this done and I need to work on a bunch of things. But it really does affect the way that we digest and process and be mindful of the foods that we're eating. So I used to shut my computer off. So just like you said, I used to shut my computer off, and I actually had, I think I've mentioned this on an episode before, I had a paper on my computer screen that I would fold over and it would say out to lunch, even if I was sitting there. And even if my boss approached me, I'd be like, I literally could be outside, but I'm choosing to eat my food here because maybe it's raining or I feel like, you know, watching a movie on my phone or something like that. But you do not have the right to interrupt me. Like, this is, you know, by law, I'm allowed a half an hour or an hour break. So I'm taking it. Nobody talk to me. So setting boundaries, I think, is really important too, Amy. Can you speak a little bit about that also for yourself, for your clients, patients? Like, you know, if they feel like they're hitting a pain point or struggling with something, and there are other more important things that they have to do, what are some guidelines or recommendations that you might help them with to kind of set those boundaries with themselves and maybe even with other people?
You know, I think sometimes if setting timers have been effective, if people like schedule things, you know, dinner's at 6, sometimes I'll recommend even like pick a day, sometimes like a weekend's the best time. And I have like weekly planners that are like tear off pages that you can actually write. Like, I've got teenagers, so some nights they have sports, some nights they have this, some nights they have meetings and stuff like that. That I'll legitimately look at that week ahead of time and say, what do I realistically have time for? Do we have time to eat dinner tonight together? No, not going to happen. Then what's plan B? You know, what's the next good choice? And that way, if I know that that night's going to be really tricky, it doesn't feel like a disaster because I knew that going into it. And I think it feels different when you're prepared for whatever might come your way. I'll say keep it simple, like make a sandwich, you know, make a pasta, you know, turn off a phone or a video and just kind of sit there, you know, even if you're, you know, grabbing fast food. Pick the best choice on the menu. Don't get the large soda and fry. You know, get a chicken sandwich, grab a bottle of water, an orange out the door. You know, those are all good choices. You can still do those types of things. But I think, but planning ahead of time and just taking the time to know and to keep things simple and that you're human and things are going to change, and is probably my best advice for, you know, busy people. And I think the people that work from home have it the hardest, because when you work with other people, you see them leave, you see them go to lunch, you stop work, you have conversations. Oh, you know, you hear people, what are you having for dinner? It gives you different ideas. But when you're home and by your refrigerator and by your pantry and there's no real stop times, I see people struggling with that the most. And then people that still go into work.
This whole dynamic, I mean, I know obviously it was a necessary transition into a lot of remote work when we entered into the pandemic in 2020. And a lot of us have stayed at home. And then there are people like me who I work for myself, or I work in with other places that I'm kind of plugged in, but I could also do remote work. It's tough. And not only just what you said, but also, especially for me in a very small New York City apartment, you know, my bathroom is my office sometimes because I'm checking emails when I'm in there, not to disclose too much information. My bedroom, I might go through emails or set up, you know, Instagram posts from my phone when I'm about to head to bed. My kitchen is next to my living room, is next to my whatever. So everything is within the confines of a very small square footage. And sometimes I have to make sure that I'm physically putting things away or physically only working in a certain area, or I'll pack things up in a bag and then empty out that bag on a desk or on a table in order to say my day has started and now my day has ended. So setting up that time of, if you don't actually have physical boundaries or demarcations of where your home is and where your office is, then at least maybe implementing something like that of putting things physically in a place or tidying things up or changing your clothes right into or out of something. I mean, listen, 9 times out of 10, I'm in a good looking top and I have makeup on, but I'm in my jammy pants. I admit that. But at least I've put the top on and the makeup on to make me feel like I've entered into my work environment. And I loved the guidance that you gave. You know, I'm a huge fan of setting timers. I don't feel like I need to pay attention to too much. As long as my alarms are going off, I'll be like, oh, right, now I have to move on to that next thing. I'm also a huge fan of pre-planning. So even if it's something every few days, look at your calendar, get some idea of what's in your house already, what things you might have to go shopping for. Or like Amy, you were saying, maybe there's a week that, you know, there's so much going on, it's takeout, 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 but trying to make better choices when you're out and about and doing that way, or buying heat and eat items from your neighborhood deli or supermarket. And then the keeping things simple, I think, is so important. You might have had this too. I can't tell you how many people I work with who immediately feel during our first session together, when I'm in the nutrition counseling discussions with them, that they have to give up everything and start from scratch and empty out their pantry. And I'm like, no, like, just go in there and find out what you have. Right. These days you can quite literally just like Google 3 ingredients and say, come up with a recipe, and it'll tell you what you can do. So you don't have to go crazy with that stuff. If you don't like cooking or don't know how to cook or don't want to cook, you can opt for pre-made things or canned foods, frozen items. We can really accommodate any potential challenges that somebody might have in order to make it as simple as possible. So I really love what you shared with everybody there too. So thank you for that. Tell us a little bit about what a current week in the life of you is.
So professionally, my practice is in a physician's office that is pediatric and internal medicine. So I have an office within this very large office. So, and, you know, I live like a mile away from where I work. So then I'm constantly like back and forth to my house. Like, we have to have something fixed and I'm told the plumber, call me on your way, I will be there in 5 minutes. That's all I need. So, and it's great because my schedule is really flexible. Like, I look ahead of time as much as possible. Like, I had to pick my son up this morning at 11:15 so I could rearrange my day to go pick him up and then bring him home. So it is really great that way. But then sometimes I'm like, oh, I didn't know I had to do this. So then I will make an appointment at 4:30 on Friday, which, you know, sometimes I'm a little tapped by then. But personally, I'm up by 5:45 every day to get the day started, because, you know, I'm someone that has to exercise in the morning, or I, you know, my most intense exercise in the morning because I feel most productive when I do that. So, and then get my kids off to school and then get to work, make my breakfast. And I generally like to make dinner before I leave the house in the morning. So when I come home, I'm one less thing to take up mental space. And then when I get home from work, it's whatever my kids are up to, meetings or sports or anything like that.
That is quite the full schedule, but I'm glad that you also set out what we call like the non-negotiables, things that are important to you that don't get sacrificed, or at least are maybe the last thing to get sacrificed unless there's extenuating circumstances. So for the people who are listening, and myself included, who are interested about private practice, running your own business, and how you've situated your practice within the larger facility there, is that something that you set up ahead of time? Did you have connections with that person who was in the community as a referral partnership, or did you end up just plugging yourself in as like rental space and then you secure your own clients that come to that location?
So my husband is actually the physician that owns the practice. I sort of established my own business in his business probably 5 or 6 years ago. Like, you know, I really missed becoming a dietitian, and there wasn't one in the area. We live in kind of a small town. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I started getting credentialed. I take insurance, so I got credentialed with insurance and had to figure out all of that on my own. A lot of Facebook groups, a lot of reading, a lot of like mistakes and figuring it out. And, you know, started with one or two patients. And I had been out of the field for like 10 years. So a lot of times I would just do nutrition counseling for free because I wasn't credentialed with insurance. I had a 10-year break. You know, my cobwebs were in my brain. So as I started accepting insurance and billing for it, and my, you know, we just moved into this really large office, but my office before was literally a converted closet that was 6 by 9. And it was tiny, but, you know, it did the job, it did the trick. And, you know, I kind of got myself established. So now it's busy where I am and kind of figure out what to do next. But, you know, I thoroughly enjoy what I do. Like, I think I have the best role in the healthcare team. You know, when I talk to my coworkers that are nurses or assistants or nurse practitioners or PAs, you know, I wouldn't want to go back out in the field doing what they do. Like, I really get to talk about the best parts of life, which is food and sleep and moving around. So yeah, so that's kind of how I got established, is kind of making my own position.
I appreciate how you started with the entry point there, because I think a lot of times, even if whatever the role is, whatever the status is for anybody going into literally whatever other career profession, and especially if you're starting your own business or your own practice in that sense, that it's helpful sometimes to get your name out there, to network, to offer free services or workshops or, you know, pro bono things that you can do just to kind of ramp up. And also, if we're just starting out, I might not feel super confident about my counseling skills or how my building of a rapport might be. And, you know, no offense to the first patients that I started out with, but they were very much experimental back then, because it was. I'm just like, sorry to the first, you know, 100 people I worked with. I may or may not have ruined you in some way, but I really appreciate that ramping up part of that. So as much as we do, no matter where we are, especially if we treat our professions as a career and not a job in that sense, I feel like we're always going to want to be learning more and growing. And just like you said earlier, with the changes that do happen in the science-based field, that things might be different 5 years or 10 years from now than they were 5 years or 10 years ago. So it helps us to stay current. It helps us to experiment. It helps us to keep working with a variety of different people, because then we strengthen our skills, our knowledge, and then are able to become the better version of our professional selves in order to work with our patients and our clients.
Right. And I think somebody said once, you just have to be 10% ahead
of there the you person go.
You're working with. You
there
just
you go.
Have 10% more.
Yeah.
You know, just that one little step ahead.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I'm like, wow, this, you know, person is, you know, really has done everything. Like, I really, you know, can't think of anything. And I'll say, you know, you're doing great. Like, you are killing it. And, you know, let me dive deeper. I don't really know. Or let me find somebody that I think if you say, I don't know, let me help you find out. I think that's what people appreciate. You don't have to know everything.
I agree with that too. Validating somebody, appreciating that people sometimes will come already understanding and having education on what their disease state is, because a lot of people are told by their doctor they have a condition and then kind of sent on their way. And thankfully, they might get referred to a dietitian and we can help explain that. But other people might, you know, it could be twofold. They could go into a deep dive down a rabbit hole of all the things that exist on the internet that maybe yeah. are more confusing, or come saying, here's what I learned and knew and know, and I want to just make sure I'm on the right track and I'll take it from here. So that's helpful sometimes to have like an educated consumer in that sense as well. What are some things that you're most interested in, and what are maybe some of your go-to resources that do keep you current, things that you enjoy learning about, or webinars or conferences that you might go to, books that you might read to stay on top of things?
Oh my gosh. Like, I have a huge list of things that of webinars that I'm like, that's so cool. I'm going to sign up and I have to do them. So it's like endless where I find things, you know, if people are emailed, you know, I'll go to, you know, continuing education credits through the office, I'll do, but there is an endless supply of information. You know, there's a, how to, you know, I've got an email about how to talk to some people about weight, which I think is a very delicate subject and something that you can never, you know, have enough conversations about, that I'm like signed up for next week. People in medicine, whether it is nurses or doctors or nurse practitioners or PAs, you know, and even patients themselves, they'll tell me something and I'm like, I'm not familiar with that. Let me go find out. And then I'll go down this rabbit hole. And yeah, it's great.
You're part of some Facebook groups. We're also, depending on maybe you are part of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics or other membership groups, and they have newsletters and they share a lot of like Today's Dietitian, the magazine. They also share continuing education opportunities, whether yeah. they're free or fee-based. I appreciate that. I agree with you with, thank goodness we have the schooling that we have, because we can figure out and critically analyze and disseminate proper information for maybe some conditions that we were not delving that deep into in school, because, you know, we can't go into every single thing. Obviously, there's only so much time in a semester. Right. But the nuances, like, I remember when celiac disease wasn't a thing and people were just complaining about stomach aches or whatever. And now, you know, here it is. It's so much more prevalent. Gluten-free available products everywhere you go across the world. And so that's really helpful to know that for anyone who's listening, if you are currently struggling, because I know PCOS comes up a lot now too, right? Polycystic ovary syndrome comes up a lot now too, or any other condition that you might feel you're not being heard or listened to, or that you're healthcare provider doesn't know much about, you know, help us advocate for you. Let us try to figure out how to research or what that might be affiliated with, because ideally at the end of everything, we can probably categorize whatever that condition is into some sort of system, either it's an immune disorder or it's an endocrine issue or it's a musculoskeletal thing. So we can try to figure out, and then maybe we can encourage, you know, more research to be done or keep up with whatever journal articles might be out there that are on the cutting edge. We can also help you figure out what websites you should be looking at and what websites you shouldn't be looking at when it comes right. to maybe unique, rare forms of something where they have support groups and resources available. Is there anything that you don't want to help people with, in the sense that, you know, makes you uncomfortable with your knowledge, or are you open to anything? Because I have a few things that I'm a little bit like, I probably wouldn't work with people who have been diagnosed with eating disorders, like true eating disorders, who've been inpatient. Like, that's something that I just don't feel comfortable with. Gastrointestinal stuff depends. Like, that's a very complex, challenging situation. It could be somewhat restrictive. It could be a lot of trial and error. Also the liver, I don't know why, but the liver sometimes confuses me. So these are things that I'm always like, maybe I'll refer you out to somebody. What about you, Amy? Are there any specific conditions or populations that you tend to be a little less excited to work with?
Definitely eating disorders, I'm not super fond of working with, because I think it takes somebody that really requires a lot of training to make sure that you don't, you know, further, you know, inflict any more conflict in the person that has that. Really high level sports nutrition, I don't do, you know, people that are, you know, ultra athletes, Even though I'm a diabetes educator, I would probably be hesitant about working with somebody with type 1 that's a high level athlete, because I think you have to be really specialized to work with that. And GI, I'll work with to a point. You know, I'll call it the low lying fruit. Like, let's try a couple things. Let's see if this helps. And if it gets to a certain level, but like even certain like fatty liver disease, I'll work with. So that's all part of, you know, kind of, I see a lot of fatty liver, but if it's like liver failure, that's really specialized. But primarily if it gets, you know, there's certain levels of certain diseases I'll work with. And if it's more complex, then I will not hesitate to refer out.
And I appreciate questions like this, or being able to be transparent with each other and also with our patients and clients, because as somebody who does want to make sure we're advocating that somebody gets the best care, you know, be mindful of the questions that you as the patient might want to ask. How much information do you know about this? Or are you okay with referring me out? Because we as dietitians are considered specialists under the healthcare profession, but then we also have eating disorder dietitians, renal dietitians who work with people with all stages of kidney disease, et cetera. So, and sports elite athletes, et cetera. Like, there's definitely more granular ways that people can get certified and specialize within this specialty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as a patient, if anyone's listening, you know, make sure you understand, even though, yes, we're all able to have a general understanding of everything, it really does help sometimes if you're looking for something or someone who's in a bit more of a unique specialty to really help support you, or at least able to refer you out with them.
Primary care model in healthcare, in which patients come to their primary care physician, and if they can't manage it, then they go to cardiology, but they don't jump into, you know, they kind of have a home base. And I kind of think of myself in that way too, is that, you know, I can see certain things. You know, I'm in your doctor's office, you know, I have access to your records, I can talk with your providers, certainly see what's going on.
Yeah.
But if it's too complex for me, then, you know, that's other people that specialize in that.
Yes. And behaviorally too, you know, part of our profession is the therapy of the medical nutrition therapy. So we are looking at behaviors and potential triggers that might happen. But if we do feel like there's a lot more complexity there, you know, I very much appreciate when people are seeing a therapist or a case worker, or I should say case manager or a social worker, that you're not coming to me for your, you know, psychotherapy. Like, I am not qualified to help you with that. But there's some things that I can work with. Anything outside of that, I'm definitely referring out, because I don't want to do more harm than good, as Amy was mentioning before. My final two questions that I ask all of my guests are kind of food pun related. It is, what is on your plate today? And that is both your figurative plate, as in when we hang up, what is the next thing that you're working on or doing? And then your literal plate, what is the next meal that you'll be having?
My afternoon, I have a feeling my kids are going to call for a ride very shortly. So I'll be doing some driving. And my plate for dinner, since my husband has a work dinner tonight, we are having breakfast for dinner, which is one of my favorite meals. And it's always a crowd favorite. So I'm kind of actually looking forward to that.
I'm also a fan of dinner for breakfast sometimes. Like, sometimes I just can't get in the zone of having, you know, oatmeal or eggs or whatever first thing in the morning. And I'll just have like last night's leftover fish or rice or whatever. So I think I love that, you know, creative outside of the cereal box thinking or having the breakfast for dinner. I love when it feels something like it's a special occasion in that sense. Yeah. Do you lean more towards eggs and bacon and sausage, or more pancakes and French toast and sweet things?
I bought a delicious looking brioche bread yesterday that I'm going to make the French toast with, and I do have bacon and eggs, so, and some fruit. So
that sounds,
and I have leftovers for breakfast tomorrow. So, and a BLT, I'm sure, is going to be on my plate with the leftover bacon tomorrow. So pretty excited.
Love it. Using up all the things. I love that.
Right.
Amy, thank you so much for spending time with
me. Thank you so much. This is great.
It was really nice getting to learn more about you, get to know you, and then have one more dietitian in my network. So I'm really happy.
I know, I love it.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina. And I'm also your host. If you like what you heard,
I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.